From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the state legislature meets in a special session to decide on outstanding issues, including mayoral control of New York City schools. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on this week's special session, and we take a look back 2 years ago to the prison break at Dannemora. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Joining us is the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt, who, of course, handles the news from the Capitol. And we're talking on a Thursday morning. And let me first say, welcome, Karen.
Nice to be here, Dave.
Yeah, well, you know, we went through a session which ended, and then the governor called a special session because we have issues on the table like New York City, the control of New York City schools, mayoral control, that is, and the deadline is, as we speak on a Thursday, tomorrow. We also had some other major issues, like the extension of sales tax on counties. There was some stuff in central New York about Vernon Downs, the racetrack, and helping it survive, and a bunch of other things, of course. And once again, the middle of the night, we hear that the Assembly showed up, had been working on this, and finally passed that, including something that will now be called the Mario Cuomo Bridge, the new Tappan Zee Bridge, which had already passed in the Senate. That now goes forward.
Well, that about sums it up. But when they left on June 21st, they made a dramatic show of leaving, saying the session was over, but they had this major unfinished business still on the table. As you said, mayoral control of New York City was to expire June 30th. That would mean that they would have to go back to dozens of small community school boards, and the city's Board of Education would have had to have started setting up those boards, you know, on July 1st, and it just seemed untenable. Also, for decades, counties have charged sales tax as part of their revenue raiser to, you know, perform functions like plowing the roads in the winter. And they hadn't renewed the sales tax for counties, so they knew they had to come back. Governor Cuomo called a special one-day session Wednesday. It took them all day to come to sort of a big ugly, or it's being dubbed the little ugly agreement, everything connected. The Assembly passed it overnight. The Senate was to pass it Thursday afternoon. We assume that's going to happen and it's not going to fall apart, though they haven't passed it yet, and you really never know in Albany. But they did seem to take care of the most pressing business, which were things that have deadlines that were running out. You mentioned there's been a lot of flooding on Lake Ontario. They have a package to take care of that. There's a raceway in the Mohawk Valley that's going bankrupt. They need to bail that out. They pretty much did everything they could to avoid having to come back to Albany until next January. But I would mention that they did leave a lot of things undone.
Well, meanwhile, as many commentators are saying, it's more of the same dysfunction. The idea that the session itself, as we see on this very day, the 29th of June, seemed to be the one issue session where they just wanted to make sure they got Uber upstate.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there was free tuition for middle-class college students. They did do some things in the budget. The budget was 8 days late, though. They worked day and night, and it was very uncertain. You know, Governor Cuomo, to his credit, for about 7 years, did kind of keep the dysfunction at bay. The budgets were done by March 31 or April 1st when they were due. The sessions ended in a pretty orderly manner. They might go a week later, but there's no set date to end session. It's all arbitrary, so that was okay. But it just does seem like we're sinking back into a little bit of dysfunction here. And I think part of it is the governor's been there 7 years. He's losing some of his political capital. He has a big scandal concerning economic development. His former top aide has been indicted on corruption charges and faces trial as early as the fall. And I think lawmakers see that, and they're not going to automatically do what Cuomo wants, as they had been doing for the past several years.
And to that end, there's been a fight over procurement for the state comptroller when it comes to the letting of contracts and being able to pre-audit those contracts.
Well, that's right. The comptroller used to be able to have oversight over economic development contracts. The governor and the legislature took that away from the state comptroller 7 years ago. Now we have this scandal where a lot of former Cuomo associates are being charged with bid rigging and bribery, and the legislature is saying, let's give the comptroller that oversight back. Now, that did not happen at the end of the session. They also did not do anything to deal with the MTA, and I think as many people are probably aware of, it seems like mass transit in New York City is just completely falling apart this summer. Maybe they could use some more money for that, but that was left on the table as well.
And it certainly doesn't help when you seem to have an ongoing feud with the mayor of the biggest city.
Well, yeah, I mean, the governor, and that's another thing about being there for that many years. He's feuded with the Democratic mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio. The state controller that we mentioned, Tom DiNapoli, is also a Democrat. Cuomo's feuded with him. So everybody just kind of hates everybody right now. Maybe a six-month break will be good for them.
Well, and the big elephant on the table, isn't it, Karen, after you just detailed the charges and the trials coming, is no substantive ethics reform.
Yeah, and that really is. You know, there's been all kinds of scandals. The two former legislative leaders are facing jail time over abusing their privileges for outside income. And there hasn't been anything done to rein that in. U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara had gone after them, as well as the governor's former associates. Now Preet Bharara has been fired. And so you got to wonder who's going to be looking after this stuff in the future. And is there going to be anything that's going to really change here?
It's interesting. Our political observer, Alan Chartok, had a conversation with state GOP chair Ed Cox this week about the coming 2018 elections. Cox, of course, saying he believes they have people that can beat Governor Cuomo. But in this race that's coming up, perhaps one of the questions that many will be asking is, what will the impact of these trials be on the coming election? And Cox used the phrase that seems like a campaign slogan, that Governor Cuomo's name is not Andrew Cuomo, but Corrupt Cuomo.
Well, we have to see the outcome of the trials. I mean, we should stress these people have been indicted. One person did plead guilty. A lobbyist,
the governor may
who was
testify,
a former
though.
Associate. Yeah, the governor had already said back in December he may be testifying. I think in the defense as a witness, but nobody's been convicted yet, so we can't go that far to say that. But certainly the problems with the mass transit in the city, where Governor Cuomo's Democratic base is, could hurt him. So there's a lot of volatility. I think everybody knows that in politics these days. So it'll be interesting to see what happens and who comes forward as a candidate against him. Is there a viable alternative?
Certainly. And I think also to be considered, as many have noted, that the governor has ambitions for higher office, the president of the United States in 2020. And to that end, we've watched at least many observers point out his move to the left.
Yeah, that's right. And he certainly is setting things up that if the opportunity came, he could run in 2020. And, you know, why not? Do the Democrats really have anybody right now who is of major stature that could be running? Who, you know, isn't over age, you know, 65, nothing against the age, but there's questions raised about, you know, if you get into your 70s, can you be a viable candidate? You know, I guess that puts Andrew Cuomo at age, is he 58, 59 now in the younger set? He might as well go for it and see how far he gets.
We've been speaking with Karen DeWitt, of course, and she takes time out of her very busy schedule to have a conversation with us about the end of this special session. Karen, I know you're running around like crazy today, but I really appreciate you taking some time to speak with our listeners on the program.
Oh, sure. Glad to do it.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. And on a Thursday morning, word coming from New York's Capitol, Alan, that no lawmakers appear to have a tentative deal on mayoral control of New York City's schools. Following a day of closed-door talks between legislative leaders, Cuomo lawmakers introduced legislation just before midnight last night that included a two-year extension of mayoral control as part of a wide-ranging deal. This from the Daily News this morning, Ken Lovett. The proposal also included, among other things, improved pension benefits for some city cops and firefighters, an extension of various local taxes, including the city's personal income tax. It also, Alan, includes a measure already approved by the Senate to rename the Tappan Zee Bridge after former Governor Mario Cuomo.
Yes, David, and the main thing is you get them all tired, the assembly members, they sit there, and then you can literally watch their faces. They change from human faces to sheep faces, and then they go, bah. And that's because they're so tired. They just want to go to sleep. So the time-honored convention is to get them tired, get them to hold up their hand and go, yeah. And it's disgusting. It's been this way for many, many years, and nothing is going to change. So the main thing here is that de Blasio, the mayor of New York, gets himself an extension on the mayoral control, which a lot of people were worried about. We know that Senator Flanagan and the Republican conference over in the Senate were furious with de Blasio for supporting Democratic candidates for the Senate and hope that they would take it over a couple of years ago. And that, of course, didn't happen, and they've been taking it out on the guy ever since. A great example of where politics and policy convene. The Mario Cuomo Bridge, no big for the folks in the legislature to name a bridge after a former governor who was governor for three terms. And I'm not a big believer in naming things for Mayor Koch or for Governor Carey or for any governor, but they do it, and they do it all the time. And I suppose that we have to get used to that because this is the way they get their jollies.
And on top of all this, how much are New Yorkers paying attention to any of it?
That's right, David. No question about it. People have no idea what goes on in the legislature. It's fascinating. You know, when you get a mayoral issue like control of the schools, it is very important to the people of New York. So all of a sudden they say, wait a second, what do those people up in Albany have to do with this? This is a city issue. No. The city, says the old political science rule, is a creature, meaning it's made by the state. So what they give, they can take away. The state has the sovereignty and the city does not. So that while the state legislature has, the ultimate power here and the governor, most people have no idea about that. And it's one of the disadvantages to the city where most of the people live and the most concentration. It's one of the disadvantages in having the legislature in a place like Albany. But that's never going to change, not in our lifetimes, I suspect. And the answer is that most people have very little idea about what goes on. I'd love you to take a little test, stand out in front of the Capitol building in Albany, and say, what's the name of the Senate leader? And if you can get people to tell you it's Flanagan, I would meet you in Macy's window.
Well, from the special session to a conversation you had this week with the head of the state Republican Party, and that is Ed Cox. Very, energetic conversation in which he seems to believe, and you questioned him on it, that the Republicans can beat Andrew Cuomo in 2018.
Well, I don't think so. I don't think the way it looks is promising for the Republicans, because as I always say to Ed Cox and to every other Republican, which we speak to on a regular basis on this program, well, who you got? Then they start mentioning the same old people. And I've always said you can't beat somebody with a nobody, but that proved to be wrong. Because let's face it, George Pataki, when he was the governor, when he was a state senator, was a nobody. And yet Mario Cuomo had his turn, and people were getting a little bit tired of it, and they ousted him. And then Pataki went on for three terms. And he really was a nobody in so many ways. He was not a guy who was good with the public. He didn't talk a lot. He was not inspiring. But people had apparently had enough of that when Cuomo was the governor. Now they're naming the Tappan Zee Bridge after Cuomo, and sometimes time heals some of those wounds. I know that Mario Cuomo, who I knew quite well, was very upset about this whole rejection, But, you know, in politics, you can't hang around forever. So I guess what's happened is that the Republicans don't have a good candidate that I can see here. They're talking about a man who ran for controller, Mr. Wilson. They're talking about other failed candidates like the Westchester County Executive Astorino. And, you know, Ed Cox is putting the best face on it he possibly can. But right now, we don't see anybody.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The heat is turning up in a coming battle for New York's 22nd congressional district seat. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
We can't change Washington until we change our representative there.
That's 119th District Assemblyman Anthony Brindisi announcing his congressional run Wednesday in downtown Utica.
We want someone who understands health care and what it means to us. Not someone who will strip 23 million Americans of their health insurance.
The 38-year-old Utica native, a Democrat, has been a member of the State Assembly since 2011. In 2016, Republican Claudia Tenney, a former Assemblywoman herself, won the seat vacated by Richard Hanna after the three-term Oneida County Republican retired.
I want to put an independent voice back in this district. A voice who shows up and stands up and gets things done. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to be your congressman.
Brindisi launched his bid with an attack on Washington.
Sadly, some people believe that the politics of hate and fear are what make this country great again. Well, let me be clear. Taking away health insurance for working families and giving big tax cuts to billionaires never created a single job in this town.
Tenney's office did not immediately reply to a request for comment. She issued a statement to media outlets branding Brindisi a, quote, slick politician who rubber-stamped the failed liberal policies of Governor Cuomo. That probably won't deter him.
So if you haven't figured it out yet, I'm applying for the job.
Brindisi isn't alone in applying. He becomes the second Democratic candidate to enter the race after Binghamton University professor Patrick Madden, a computer scientist who tossed his hat in the ring last month. Madden positions himself as a man of the people in video on his campaign website. Here's an excerpt.
In normal times, I just keep doing what I do. I like my job. I like the people I get to work with. But these are not normal times. Washington has gone off the rails, and typical politicians are not going to fix the mess. If things are going to improve, we need some outsiders to step up. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm not part of the establishment or the political machines. I expect some pushback because there's always pushback against people like you and me.
Observers say this could be a big money race to watch as Democrats and Republicans battle for control of the House. The 22nd congressional district entails Oneida, Cortland, Chenango, and Madison counties, as well as parts of Broome, Herkimer, Oswego, and Tioga counties.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week marked the second anniversary of the end of one of the largest manhunts in New York history, when officials captured the second of two men who escaped from the Clinton Correctional Facility in Dannemora. The episode led to convictions, inquiries, and calls for security reforms, and even a television movie. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
2 years ago, Governor Andrew Cuomo made an announcement that relieved many residents of the North Country.
It took 22 days, but we can now confirm Mr. Matt is deceased and the other escapee, Mr. Sweat, is in custody.
On June 6, 2015, David Sweat and Richard Matt were discovered missing from their cells at Clinton Correctional Facility in Dannemora. Following a 23-day manhunt, both inmates were eventually found in neighboring Franklin County. Matt was shot and killed by a tactical team from Customs and Border Protection on June 26. Sweat was shot and captured 2 days later. Sweat survived his injuries and later pleaded guilty to charges related to the escape. Complaints of brutality against inmates increased in the immediate aftermath of the escape. In August 2015, the New York Times reported prisoners were beaten, placed in solitary confinement, threatened, transferred, and lost property and privileges during and immediately after the search. The New York State Inspector General had been ordered by Governor Cuomo to investigate what happened. The report on the management of the prison and what led to the escape was issued on June 6, 2016, and Catherine Leahy Scott criticized everything from prison management to state oversight.
The extent of complacency and failure to adhere to the most basic security standards was egregious and inexcusable. DOCS has cooperated with my office to implement critical reforms.
Prisoners Legal Services of New York Executive Director Karen Murtaugh says in the 2 years since the escape and the year since the IG's report, there have been some changes at Clinton Correctional.
There were some administrative changes early on. They brought a zero tolerance policy, a higher standards for security, and DOCS also instituted a pilot project to have COs wear body cameras at Clinton and also at Bedford Hills.
Murtaugh reports the upsurge in the number of prisoner complaints filed with Prisoners Legal Services shortly after Matt and Sweat were captured, alleging violent retribution by corrections officers, has diminished.
Does it mean that the changes in management at Clinton and the body cameras and the zero tolerance policy has improved conditions? Or does it mean that prisoners are less likely to complain because of what happened to them when they did complain? It's really difficult for us to say, but I do know that the complaints have gone down.
Clinton County Sheriff David Favreau was thrust into an unexpected scenario, as there had never before been a successful escape from the maximum security prison. As he looks back, he says the events did not lead to dynamic changes in local patrols, but rather in how he assesses strategy.
I'm going to evaluate situations a little bit more and regroup with my people and get more input from them and look at options of things that we can do. I know there were sometimes nearly 900 people that were focusing in the area of Katyville, for example. And now I'm looking at that saying it would have been probably better served have we broken up some of our resources and put them out west where I initially was up in the Lime Mountain area.
Former prison tailor Joyce Mitchell was convicted for her role in helping Matt and Sweat escape and is serving her sentence at the Bedford Hills Correctional Facility. She was denied parole in February 2017. Former corrections officer Gene Palmer was fined and sentenced to 6 months in the Clinton County Jail for his role in the escape. He was released after serving 4 months in June 2016. A Lifetime television movie about the breakout aired earlier this year, and a Showtime series is also reportedly in the works.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1726. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamcpodcasts.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.